Blog Talk Radio.
Second show of 2015. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Welcome, Center Stage. Tonight's show is one that I must admit that it took a long time for me to decide to do because I really couldn't initially see where it was necessary to address. But as time went on, I realized it was necessary for some folks to hear. So let us be clear tonight. No person of African descent that I know of or am associated with condones black-on-black crime. We don't like it. We hate that it exists, and we wish that we could rid our community of it. So with that acknowledged, it seems that every time a black person is killed by a non-black person or a police officer, the first thing the critics point out is that the black community doesn't say anything when black men kill each other. Well, I'd like to say tonight that that just isn't true. Our community is saddened each time we hear of a black man killing another black man. And tonight we're going to discuss it. We're hoping that tonight, if we acknowledge openly, publicly, that there is a problem within our community and that we are always concerned when we find out that a black person has killed another black person. Maybe then that our critics can be quietened. I mean, I'm sorry, I don't even know if that's a word. If we can hush our critics, rather, about the fact that we do care. It does matter. Black lives matter regardless of who takes that life. And so tonight, that's what we're going to be addressing tonight. Black-on-black crime is never okay. That's our topic tonight. Black-on-black crime is never okay. I see my co-host on the line. I see Christopher. I see AJ. Good evening, guys. Welcome to the second show.
How you doing?
Good evening. Good evening.
Good evening. You can see the black-on-black crime is never okay. Is that you, AJ, or is that you, Christopher? Okay, here, see that. Do y'all hear that? Okay, now it's gone. Let's say it. How do you all see it when critics say this each and every time a black person is killed by police officers? What are your thoughts?
Well, I really think the critics are basically correct, because when you look at the actions of the people, when it's a non-black or a policeman that kills a black, we're in an uproar. But you can have, 15 deaths in Oakland on the weekend, or in Chicago, or in Dallas, or Fort Worth, or Houston, and it's just a blimp on the news.
Wow. Christopher? Christopher, did we lose him on the phone?
No, hey, Kara, could you say that again? I'm sorry, I was experiencing some dropping in my phone line.
Okay. What are your thoughts? I mean, when you hear, the fact that critics say every time that a black man is killed by police, that where is the black community, or where is, they'll say, Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson when a black man kills another black man? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, my mother, and I heard it from Dick Gregory too, but my mother kind of said it too. A lot of times, for instance, in relationship to what you said, when people hear on the news that there was a murder, or that there was a violent crime committed, a lot of times what you hear is you hear people say, oh, I hope it wasn't a black person. But what you don't hear them say is that I hope that it never happened.
Okay.
I think the part of the problem is that right is right and wrong is wrong. Now, there may be things that create the violence or create the situation, but there's a fine line between, justifying a killing or shooting or a violent crime, but particularly with black-on-black crime, it's getting a bad rap because, in essence, you commit crimes where you live. So crime is prevalent no matter which community, although it may be higher in some areas than others. I think that the issue of what the black community needs to do in terms of addressing crime, violence, murders, I don't think there's been a very good job here in Chicago done on that, although there are organizations that do exist and that I've partnered with to try and address the issue in various ways.
Well, Jeff has joined us tonight. We got Dr. Zaha Isis back with us. Good evening, Dr. Isis. How are you? Good evening. 585-820. Okay, I think I opened the wrong line. 302-465, good evening.
Yes, good evening. It's Dr. Zaha Isis.
Okay, I'm sorry. How are you?
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, I hear us talking about black-on-black crime, and, of course, we always want to deal with those issues. But we must also put it in the context that black people, like any other group of people, have a right to have their pathologies. And, you know, we don't hear the media talking about white-on-white crime, which is also astronomically high. You know, and we also must address those issues as to why there are black-on-black, well, there is black-on-black crime within the black community, especially at this time period in which we live in. We've always had black-on-black crime in this country. Black-on-black crime is ancient. Even if we go into the Bible, we'll see that Moses, who was black, killed an Egyptian soldier who was black, you know. So crime is a part of humanity, right? And black people are human beings just like any other group. But my question is, my issue is black-on-black crime in service to white supremacy. And if that is an issue to deal with, we must address the issue as to why so many black people are killing themselves or allegedly killing themselves. Are some of these killings self-induced, or are there also outside forces? And even to deal with that, we need to look at various statistic patterns over the last 4 or 5 decades to see what was the crime rate like before segregation. What was the black-on-black crime during the 70s, 80s, and 90s? When did it take this astronomical jump, and what are the forces behind that?
That's a great point. That is an excellent point. And to add to what you said about the crime numbers, you know, they really, when you hear it in the media, you hear, you know, Fox News reporting that black-on-black crime is just, you know, through the roof. In actuality, 91% of black victims murdered by offenders, while at the same time, 83% of white victims are killed by another white person. So when you look at it that way, it's not that big of a difference. And so we got to stop looking at everything mainstream media says and jumping on that bandwagon and just taking it at face value that they're giving us true numbers. If you look at it and you just say black people are killing black people in record numbers, it does look bad. But then when you look at the fact that white people are killing each other at almost the same number, it's equally as bad. Even though tonight our topic is black-on-black crime is never okay. We are talking about that tonight, but we're just trying to put it all, you know, in a neat note for you to understand that even though black people don't, I don't know anybody, to be honest with you, I don't know any black person that condones black-on-black crime, ever. I've never heard anybody say, you know what, I think they should have killed that person. I don't hear that. And so when I hear critics say things like that, it really makes me wonder, you know, where are they getting this information from? I mean, how do they think that black people feel that it's okay for another black person to kill another black person? Maybe we don't get an uproar like we should, and maybe that's something we need to address, and that's why we're talking about this tonight, so that we can go on record and say, yes, black people do have a problem when black people kill each other. We got to say that. We got to say it tonight. I'm sorry, who was jumping in? Was somebody jumping in? Okay, y'all, we're going to go to the phone lines. We're going to go to area code 708-717. Good evening. You're on Thursday.
Hey, how you doing, Carrie? You're doing a fantastic job, as always, and the subject matter is always timely and on point. And I just wanted to chime in briefly. I'm from Chicago. And Chicago is known around the country as really the murder capital of the country, and people think Chicago is this super dangerous city. And I thought so as well, if you listen to the propaganda.
Ooh.
And what I noticed is that the murder rate now in the 2000s are much lower than they were in the 90s. In the 90s in Chicago, murder rates was hitting like 900 murders a year, 800 murders a year, 700 murders a year in the city of Chicago. That was on average. And if you notice, that was right around the time when movies like Boys in the Hood came out, Menace to Society, South Central. And since that time, and I noticed that that pattern of that type of movie is somewhat diminished. And I see now roughly between 450, 500 murders a year in the city of Chicago. And I said all of that to say this. If we believe the propaganda that the white media gives about our community, then shame on us. Because white supremacy has never been in place to inform us properly. And I love what you and the other guy was saying previously about how the crime in the white areas is pretty much parallel with what's going on in the black community, but nobody really talks about white-on-white crime.
Mm-hmm.
This is a phenomenon. And I tell everybody right here, right now, why there's black-on-black crime. Because black people live by each other. The country's pretty much segregated. And everybody has criminals and killers in their own respective communities. So there's always mm-hmm. going to be black-on-black crime, white-on-white crime, Mexican-on-Mexican, Hispanic-on-Hispanic, so on and so forth. It's a demographic thing. It's where people live. And people tend to live around people that look like themselves. I just wanted to add that to the show, Carrie. Once again, great job, sis.
Thank you. That's DRB with the DRB show right here on Block Talk Radio. Y'all check him out on Sunday afternoons. He is some awesome. Again, DRB show right here on Block Talk Radio. I 100% agree with that. Now we're going to go to 314-853. Good evening. You're on Sam Show.
Hello.
Hello.
How you doing, Miss Carrie?
Fine. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I noticed you wasn't on last week. I think it was last week you wasn't on.
I think it was week before last we weren't on because everybody was celebrating the holidays.
Yeah, I think it was the when you had a so-called leader on your show, and I was thinking about, you know, people following people, leaders, and I noticed that you were saying that you wanted to donate money to these leaders, to this particular leader, so-called leader anyway. You know, I don't, I'll take the information, but I'm not following anybody because people are so tricky today, you just don't know what you're getting into if you understand where I'm coming from.
You know, I think I know what you're referring to, and you know what? This is what I'll say about that. If you don't agree, if you don't, you know, feel that you want to follow anybody, that's okay. But let's not bash anybody, okay? Let's not just, you know, y'all say, look, y'all got bad old bashing people up there. But let's just try to realize that our community is in trouble. We're under attack. And that at some level, we got to come together. We got to decide who is going to be a leader. And then if all of us can, whether it be a unanimous vote or be a majority vote, we got to do something. I mean, because it's insanity what we're doing, it's nothing, because it's not.
But don't you think a leader, your mother and father should be your leader?
Okay. Okay, let's just do this. I'll agree with that if you're a child, but we're an adult. But you know what? Tonight we got a similar topic. The topic tonight is black on black crime is never okay.
Well, that's the whole thing. People are not teaching their children anything.
Okay.
You have children having children. How can you come together? Ignorance will never come together. And as long as you don't teach, what do you say?
I think ignorance is because it's still in darkness. And I think when you bring light to darkness, then people are able to wake. And so if you keep people in darkness, they're going to forever be asleep. But I think if you put them in the light, then that's when people become awake. That's what I think.
Hello?
Uh-huh, what's it?
Who is your leader?
You know what? Okay.
Answer. Who is your leader?
I follow God.
Oh, okay. But you say you follow God, that's your leader?
That's my leader.
So you don't say no man is your leader but God?
Okay, let's say you asked me a specific question and I gave you a specific answer. You said, who is my leader? You didn't define in what category. You just said, who is my leader? Well, my overall leader is God. So that's how
I can
answer.
And I can understand if that's who you choose to be your leader, is any other man your leader? The only one your leader, the only leader you have is God. Is that what you're saying?
Okay, remember real quick, the topic tonight is political and black crime is never okay. That's our topic. See, we got to see our topic because I think this topic is too important. We got to fix it. We got people who are saying it's okay to police murder our young people because we murder each other. It's too important for us not to stay focused on that tonight. Address that particular question. Address the topic. Is black on black crime ever okay? I think the answer is no, right?
You say. I can't hardly understand what you say. Is black on black crime what?
Ever okay?
Well, no, heck no. I don't go along with that because that's out of ignorance. The black on black crime.
Yeah.
I think that if you start off with your children, teaching your children, but we don't have that. That's what people don't seem to understand. And all we have learned, we learned this from the heathen. We learned this kind of behavior. It's like I go back to slavery. When you look at slavery, look what did people learn during slavery? And that stuff passes on through the day. People don't realize that.
Okay, would any of the panel like to address the caller? Because I don't think he's hearing me tonight. So, Dr. Issa, AJ, Christopher, y'all want to address the caller?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
See, I understand what you're saying and where you're trying to go, but it's not the same. See, you want to go in an inadvertent way to try and get to what we're talking about. But see, what we're talking about is black on black crime today. I know the historical data that you want to bring up is cool and all that's well and good, but how are we going to stop now?
Can we really say
that?
I think what AJ was saying is that you're kind of taking us off topic a little bit.
Karen, maybe as AJ comes back on, in terms of black on black crime, no, it's never okay. But and I know there were some statistics, but here's some statistics that are important because it's based on the geographic location or area or living situation of black folks. For instance, in 1960, they did a study and they were comparing rapes, robberies, and murders among black men and women, but mainly men. And what they found is that in the year of 1960, in urban areas, the predatory crimes, rapes among blacks on black was 52%, robbery was 56%, murders were 56%. That same year, for rural predatory crimes, rapes were 19%, robbery 23%, murder 37%. So they just did an overall statistical analysis, and they showed how black-on-black crime was minimal, or I would probably say 15 to 20% in rural America or pre-1950, and then after a lot of the migration from the south to the north, those increase exponentially.
Okay, let me jump in here and say something that I'm aware of. Someone had made me, and I don't know if I mentioned this on the show or I mentioned it on Facebook, I don't remember. But anyway, what was the last census? 2000? Was it 2000? The last census or 2008? Well, the last census that was done.
2010.
What year was it then?
2010.
Okay, 2010. That census, they recorded every Hispanic person as Caucasian. So you were Caucasian from a certain part of the world, or you were Mexican, Caucasian, but everybody was labeled under Caucasian, okay? I recently saw an article that I also posted on my Facebook page this week where they're reporting in some of the jails Hispanics are Caucasian. So if we look at all the numbers, this fudge is going on everywhere. So, you know, when you really look at everything considered, I don't even know if black-on-black crime is as bad as they're saying it is. But tonight, all we want to deal with is to our brothers, to our sisters who are committing black-on-black crime. We don't condone it. We're calling you out. We feel like you're like a cancer to the community. And we hope that they get it together because, you know what, in the end, we are under attack. And the sooner we realize that unity is the only way we can survive the attack because the beast is coming for all of us, that's the only way we're going to make it out of this thing. So we're talking about this topic tonight only because we realize our critics are using it against us. And anytime I realize that someone is taking a disadvantage that I have and using it against me, I walk out the disadvantage. You see what I'm saying? So if I have a flaw and I realize that my enemy can take that flaw and use it against me, guess what? I fix that flaw. Shame we should do with this issue in the community. We should call out the problem children in our community because when you get through, if they can use that as an excuse for police officers to kill us, bad police officers to kill us, because it's okay because we're killing each other, we got to do better. I mean, would y'all agree with that?
Carrie, would it be okay if I jump back in just briefly?
Sure, Dino, go ahead.
There's a wonderful documentary that came out a few years ago called What Black Men Think. And it really shined the light on a lot of the misnomers that go on and that said about the African-American / black community, whatever we want to call ourselves these days. And I'm just going to throw a question out there for your listening audience. And I found it pretty amazing when I got the answer. In this particular documentary, the question was posed, are there more black men in college or are there more black men in prison?
Ooh.
Now, propaganda, I always heard it, there are more black men in prison.
Yeah.
But when this brother broke the numbers down, there was actually more black men in college. And as you delve deeper into the numbers, if you look at the number of black men in prison, that age range from anywhere from 18 to 60. And if you look at the number of black men in college, that number ranges anywhere between 18 and 24. And there was still more black men in college than in prison. And you had a much smaller sampling of an age range. And I'm saying that to say this. In many instances, if we listen to the propaganda, and numbers can be manipulated any way somebody wants to use them, depending upon their perspective and what they're trying to get across.
Mm-hmm.
Propaganda is probably one of the most dangerous things that's going on in our communities today. And the reason why I say that is because when the world views you a certain way, then the world will stand idly by when law enforcement does what it wants to do to a community.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I would just really like us to start looking at numbers and the truth, not propaganda.
Yeah.
And back to the question on black-on-black crime, is it ever okay? Of course not. We all know that's the case. However, I'd like to say this. I believe personally that the bulk of black people are not breakers of the law. The bulk of black people are trying to do what every other American citizen is trying to do in this country, raise their children, work, and make it through. Some are entrepreneurs. Some have higher aspirations up the financial ladder. Some are millionaires. You're always going to have that element of grungy, grimy people in any demographic. And like you said, with us being in a state of emergency, it's time to cut the cancer loose. And so I commend you in saying those of you who don't want to act right, like the old Gladys Knight and the Pip song, neither one of us want to be the first to say goodbye. But sometimes you just got to cut the dead weight loose.
It's true. And, yeah, it's sad to say that because, you know, when I first started this show, I was thought this for everybody. I thought I was supposed to reach everybody. And then I found myself every week feeling like a preacher after he preached at our time. I felt so drained because I felt like I was constantly going back and trying to get all the young ones and all the ones that didn't understand. And then I just realized, wait. You know, people have got to meet you where you are. You know what I'm saying? Because at some point, everybody's got to do their own reading. Everybody's got to do their own research because we are being beaten to death by this beat. That's just my opinion, y'all. And until we do better, I mean, because we've got a propaganda campaign that says black people are scary. You know, black men are like the boogeyman. I mean, Darren Wilson painted a picture that Mike Brown was this big, big, humongous monster that was coming at him, and he felt like a five-year-old child. And he's a police officer with a gun and a radio and a taser and everything else. But he felt like a five-year-old child up against Mike Brown, the big Hulk Hogan monster. And so we got to realize this thing is real. And so we got to fix the problems in our community. We got to fix them quick because we got critics coming at us and accusing us of being, like, conflicted with, you know, some of the stuff that goes on in the community, and we're not. I mean, I'm never, ever going to say it's okay for a black person to kill another black person or a black person to rob another black person or, you know, we got a new black code. I mean, and let's go here. Tonight, the black hole goes like this, and I'm 100% behind this, and anybody that isn't, I question your motives. The new black hole goes like this. We don't steal from each other. We don't kill each other. We don't offer drugs to or sell drugs to each other. We combine our dollars and buy as a group to maximize the worth of our dollars. We protect our own women and children first. We educate our own every chance we get. We don't fight each other. Brothers protect and build up other brothers. Sisters protect and build up other sisters. Brothers protect and build up sisters. Sisters protect and build up brothers. And we look for every opportunity to start our own businesses serving the needs of our people first. Y'all, you know what? It is what it is. We are under such attack that, you know what, we don't have a choice. And for anybody Caucasian who's listening, anybody that knows me knows I'm not a racist at all. But I just see right now nobody is coming to save us. We're on this island, and nobody is coming to save us. And all we have is each other. And the only way that we're going to make it off the island alive is that we come together in unity. So if this sounds racist, I apologize because that's not my intent. My intent tonight is to show we got an issue, and it's big, and it's huge, and it's growing. And until we address it, it will continue to grow. And we just got to do something. I mean, it's just that simple. So tonight, if you just tune in, you come center stage tonight for the topic, black on black crime is never okay. Tonight we're addressing critics. Yeah.
Now, what I wanted to say is, there's been wake-up calls for the last bunch of years. You know, I thought the first wake-up call was when everybody rallied together and went for Gina Six. And then the Occupy movement started. And then I thought the wake-up call was when everybody went to Florida for Trayvon. Then I thought really the wake-up call was when everybody went to St. Louis, to Ferguson. But it's like we gather together to fight for one cause, and that's the only cause we have on our agenda. Then we go back home and start eating bonbons and watching TV.
People said, oh, we overcome some. That's why Ferguson jumped off the way it did, because the young people realized we ain't overcame like we were singing about, and that, you know, after the photo ops and, you know, after the marches, then everything went back to normal, and these young people decided in Ferguson it's not going to be that way. Well, we, you know, rather die than go back to slavery. And so I think the young people got you know, get a good point. I'm not going back. I mean, seriously, give me liberty or give me death, but I'm not doing that. I'm not picking cotton. I'm not doing any of those things that's going to take me back 400 years. And that said, I think we got to wake up the community that's still asleep and let them know that if we don't get up now, we might as well lay down forever. I mean, seriously, it's just that crucial. And that's just where I'm at tonight. If you want to chime in on tonight's topic, get on the phone line. Dial us up at 347-850-8390, then press 1. Tonight we're addressing the critics who think that black people don't have a problem with black-on-black crime. We're also dealing with the fact that black lives matter regardless of who takes it. And we're talking about tonight, how can we stop it? How can we fix what's going wrong in our community? We're going to go to area code 716544. Good evening. You're on Thursday.
Hey, Carrie. How you doing? It's Chris.
Hi, Chris. How you doing?
Good, good, good. Very good subject matter you're touching on, and I love the black code as something we need to get into.
Yeah.
Whenever there is a change needed, we never seem to continue. We have to carry this on, you know. White America hands down racism to their kids and their grandkids. We don't hand down nationalism or civil rights or anything. We lulled ourselves to sleep into thinking that everything is over with. And it's not. You know, so the enemy has great endurance. You understand? You have to remember it took endurance to initiate and carry out colonialism roughly 1,000 years ago.
Okay.
Same thing with slavery. You know, imagine the energy expended to go dragging some people away from their homes half a world away onto your home and making them build you a country. All right? So we have to always be mindful of the enemy and how persistent that enemy is. And we're doing it, and it's a great thing that we're getting this done in the light of a president, a great president who's withstood racism himself and economically saved the country. But at the same time, he's afraid to directly address race. So it's up to us to do that. Okay? So these black-on-black killings are not going to stop until we are determined collectively to stop doing this ourselves.
Mm. See, but you know what? And I love my president, but obviously we got to realize that it's a problem. We got to fix
we don't even have to explain our not being prejudiced. White people know we're not prejudiced. See, in their minds, we should have been shooting at them a long time ago. That's really what they're thinking. They always expect that. We are the friendliest, most forgiving people in history, probably in the history of the world. Okay?
Probably.
So it's not even a question of us being prejudiced or especially racist. All right?
Okay.
We're always trying to go along and get along. But we now have to close ranks and clean up our own neighborhood. We're not going to have any success with them anyway unless we get ourselves together. You know, it's just like two feuding families. If you and your next door neighbor are feuding, if his house is disorganized, you're not going to listen to them, okay? But if they're organized, you have no choice but to listen to them. Okay, so the same, it's no different with us.
But how do we call out the cancer in our community?
How do we do what?
Call out the cancer in our community.
How are the chances?
The problem children, the ones that I'm doing the killing, the ones that I'm robbing,
We have a lot of, the majority of, here's the thing, the majority of us are not doing it. They're trying to get through us to our kids. They want the enemy wants our kids to take us out. All right? And what the beginning of that, it starts with the single parent family, especially the single mother family. Since there was an increase in that, an explosion of that, especially between around the mid to late 80s to the early 90s, you have kids that are just illogical, unsensible. you know, just do mind-boggling things. And that's when they brought in the crack cocaine and everything, and that's when they brought in AIDS, all of that stuff. That's all timing. That's not coincidence. So you have to the parents, all black parents, the black father who's really responsible for that. He has to reach back. Even he doesn't have to marry the boy's or the kid's mother, but he has to raise his kid. He has to have that strong male figure. And teach them right from wrong, and he has to wake the mother out of her delusion that she can just raise it herself, and you know, she brings all these alternative rules here that's making the boys think like women. Okay, and once that's done, then we can move forward. But this thing we got now, the separation of the black family. And everybody's thinking separately. That's what's killing us, literally.
See, I think there's many things that kill us. I think it's multi-tiered. I think it's been, in the making and being constructed for years. We just weren't paying attention. When we first, I saw someone on a video where they were saying when hip-hop first came in, hip-hop was all about empowerment of our people. And then some kind of way, you know, the record labels were smart enough to flip it and tell the artists, listen, that, you know, that's too corny. We want you to rap about, you know, the thug life y'all got in your community. And then all of a sudden, hip-hop went all about, you know, everybody's a bitch in a hole and everybody's mm-hmm. playing drugs and all the brothers are murdering each other. And we accepted
right.
that.
Yes, yes. Well, see, that's the whole thing. When they changed the course of hip-hop, when hip-hop was changed, the course of hip-hop was changed, that change began in a boardroom. There may or may not have been one or two blacks in that room, but that was recording industry suits because they looked back at the days when civil rights and songs like Moving On Up was going on, What's Going On, things like this, songs that were inspirational, Sam Cooke's song. You know, songs like this. What they did, they took hip hop, they said we can redirect them because right now these guys are talking about fight the power and F the police. We got to change that. And so they more or less told you your enemy is the people on your block that you grew up with. Feud with them, fight them. You know, pull your pants down. Things like this. All of that was organized in a boardroom. All right, that had nothing to do. That's not black culture at all. Okay, what came? Hip hop began in the Bronx. That was black culture. Okay, and it caught wildfire. So the man had to figure out a way to control it and use it against us. Otherwise, it could make a change. It could have made a change that would have been extremely progressive for us.
But see, it's our responsibility to call out hip hop. You know, we already know the record business is bad. If you want to see it get even worse, we'll start buying your albums until you rap about something that's uplifting for the community.
Yeah, well, we had before gangster rap or so-called hardcore rap or whatever. You know, these guys aren't gangsters. I don't know why they call it gangster rap, but it gave them a false conscience, gave them delusion, and it fueled the Bloods versus the Crips. Okay, before then you had groups like X Clan or Public Enemy and all these other groups that they were, you know, and you had brothers and sisters walking around with the caps with X on it. Okay, we were studying our history and all this stuff, all that came to a dead halt. Like you say, so you had the rap music that just talked about bitches and hoes and niggas.
Uh-huh.
That was very detrimental. Okay, so that it seems to be that we've allowed pop culture to control us, whereas we in the beginning controlled pop culture. We black people invented every type of music in this country except country and western.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that jazz and rock and roll and rap and big band, blues, R&B, that's all us. okay?
But see,
you know,
but it's kind of like watching a soap opera, though, and then you saw that you don't live your life like what you saw in the soap opera. That's the same that applies to listening to rap music and thinking you're going to live your life based on what you heard somebody rapping about who ain't actually living it. That's crazy.
Right, right. Yeah, it is. It's insanity. It's pure insanity. But that's what we're seeing now. That's why I said before, it's giving young people a false conscience, giving a lot of young boys a false conscience and a very warped view of life. And so they want material things. Now, there was a period a few years ago where gangster rap was taking a little bit of a backseat to materialism. The bling thing came out. It's still just as bad. You know, what you've done, you've created a group of individuals. That's what we got with young boys now, young boys and young girls. The thing now is they're turning the girls against each other through reality TV. Mm. So that's their hardcore rap, okay? You know, they're showing girls new models of behavior. And this all started with that with Flavor Flav, and he put that character on called New York.
Uh-huh.
Then she got her own show, I Love New York, you know, and then they just say, you know, hey, act as crazy as you can. You know, they teach other black girls to act like that. And that's what it is. A lot of girls act like that today, don't know why, but it's been something that, it's something that's been handed down to them.
But
you know,
this kind of all going to doesn't apply just to the black community, it applies to parents, period. When you have kids, you should not raise your kids and just open the door and turn them loose on the world. I mean, I think that's what we're seeing. It used to take a village to raise a child. I used to say that. That doesn't happen anymore. But if the village never comes, if you have children, it is your responsibility to control your children. And I think that's what we're seeing too much of. The kids are just out there running amok. I mean, and wreaking havoc on the community, and nobody is calling them to the world because the parents are afraid of them.
Right. You got parents nowadays, they don't want to take responsibility. A lot of black parents, especially black moms, they think that the educational system is supposed to raise their kids. And, you know, as long as I feed my kid and send him to school, that's all I got to do.
See,
you know,
he
doesn't work that way.
Exactly.
You know,
I think all of this applies to our issue. I think every time we see a 15-year-old kill a 14-year-old, first of all, you should have known what your 15-year-old was doing. And I'm not saying you know at all hours of the day, you know, what your child is doing. But for the most part, if you're rambling through his room, if you're keeping up with what he's going, you know, into online, and you're talking to your child on a regular basis, and you're sitting down and you're hearing what he's dealing with in his day, and hopefully, you know, you can be honest with him about your hiccups when you were a child. Maybe we can get past some of this, but we're losing a whole generation. I mean, and when we see these crimes, it's mostly the younger part of our community doing this. We got to do better. I mean, we absolutely got to do better because when the revolution comes, we don't have any time to correct it then. We got to correct whatever's going wrong now. That's just my belief. I mean, it's absolutely now or never.
Well, our first revolution is going to have to be we just stop killing each other. Like you say, that black, we have to stop fighting each other, stop taking, we're killing and fighting over dumb reasons. You know, he looked at me or she left me. You know, we're killing each other based on every average everyday situation that just shouldn't be. All right. So once we get past that, we can use that's the revolution right there in itself. You know. So you know you have to have a ceasefire.
How do you call it out though? Do you go to the gangs and you say, okay, you know, I think Dino Dean called out the gangs on his show one day. Do you call out the gangs and say, hey, you know, y'all are killing us over here with all this nonsense y'all are fighting about? I mean, because then, you know, you got some pissed off brothers with pistols. But, I mean, mm-hmm. How do you call out the problems in the community, the problem people in the community?
Well, you know what, it's interesting. You mentioned there are groups that do work with gangs. We got some here in Buffalo. Okay, I work with people on individual basis. I've coached basketball, young boys. You know, that's one thing. That's another avenue, distraction. Okay, give them something to belong to. A lot of them belong. You want to get them off the street corner, give them an alternative, either a job or they belong to something, little league or a basketball or a sports league, whatever. Then you can talk to them from that point, okay, because they're listening to you. Our parents, you know, you talk about how it was back in the day. They didn't need all that, okay? My mother, my parents and my teachers were a tag team, okay? Mm-hmm. My teachers wrote a letter or called my parents. My parents didn't say, "Oh, you're just mad. You're picking on my son," you know, and curse the teacher out. My parents got on my butt. All right, you don't see that today. The parents, a lot of the moms are taking their brains and throwing them out the window for these kids. All right, so what's going on is you got to get through to the kids first. I think. You know, it's tough as it is, like you say, you go to the gangs or whatever the case may be. Yeah, you can still be a gang, but work for us. Don't work against us. All right? When we have, you talk about, Malcolm X said, what, I think he talked about how we can go over to Southeast Asia and fight against 13 million Chinese. He's referring to the Vietnamese then. But we come home, we don't want the real enemy. Okay? We got enough arms now to put up a respectable front and make people respect us. We do. We can fire some bullets back. It doesn't have to be. What do you think would happen to Officer Darren Wilson or Officer Pantaleo if they were shooting up Italian boys or young Arab boys or young Jewish boys? What would happen to them? They would disappear. You understand me? Those individual cops would disappear. That's what we're not doing. They don't get those Italians. You wouldn't see Italians marching on the street. You wouldn't see Jews marching on the street. They would hunt these guys down and take them out.
And
they do it very quietly.
Well, let me say this. Let's just say that in New Orleans, where it's predominantly black, let's say, what is it called, the area of the nine district down there that everybody talks about? I forgot what they call it, but something nine, the district nine or precinct nine or something down there. But anyway, let's just say that whole section decided that they were going to take back their streets, and any time a cop came in there that was acting out of control, they would just shoot them down. Okay, well, if you ain't got nothing but bullets and your enemy's got a drone, how long are we going to make it like that?
Every enemy ain't going to have a drone.
Well, the government is the enemy.
Here's the thing. You raise some good points. White America is so paranoid against blacks, we can't really win, really. We stopped killing each other for a year. You're going to see white America say, wait a minute. You guys ain't killing each other no more. Therefore, you must be up to something. So we're going to throw you in jail just based on that. Okay? Plus, we're losing billions of dollars on loss of money because you stopped selling drugs to each other. Okay? So we can't have that. You know? So they're going to come up with some contingency somewhere or another. So we always have to plan. Okay? We can't do step one and step two and then stop. We got to do step three, four, and five. All right, we got to do the whole thing and let them know why we're doing it, and this will tell them to back off. All right, then now the Black Lives Matter, it becomes a reality to them. Okay.
And I know that it's funny you say that because today on Facebook, when I was posting this event, now you don't see anything racist about this. All the talk it says is black on black crime is never okay, right? Why were things repeatedly taken down? Why were things, you know, erased or altered? You know, one thing was banned and the other thing come down. Because you know what? I agree. They ain't trying to see us come together. To this show, all kind of problems, technical problems occur because they don't want to see us come together. And I think we got to why is it, because there's a group of people that would love to talk about how bad we are and how we're always killing each other, and so much of our community is all about thugism and low-life-ness and all that, but at the same time, whenever we try to come together, they kill the leader or they send in sellouts or snitches to infiltrate the group.
Right. See, what's going on?
You know, and I agree with the gentleman. I mean, the premise that I think we have to come to terms with is that white supremacy and the racist agenda depends on the inability or the perception of inability of black folks not to unify. And when you think about that, most times, and I know we're talking about black-on-black crime, but even in terms of getting out or addressing and having a remedy for the cancerousness of black-on-black crime, we have to look at that. It is true. For instance, if you go to traffic court, by and large in Chicago, it's disproportionate, and you mainly have 60 to 70% of traffic court black individuals. In Cook County, if you get enough tickets, they can criminalize that, and you can end up in jail. See, they're doing things that are so subtle that are guaranteeing that people won't actually have the motivation to unite to bring about a change in terms of the black-on-black crime, because that the prison-industrial complex, the socioeconomic fibers. I mean, you probably can go to the smallest urban town in America. It probably has a jail, and it's probably 60, 70% black. So it has become an institution that white supremacy and the American fiber is used to. I mean, bills are passed based on the prisons, about building new prisons and who's going to bid to get this and who's going to provide the food, who's going to provide the clothes and all those type of things. So the thing with black-on-black crime, it is something that we in the black community have to be very vigorous in addressing, because if we can work the system and understand that white supremacy is calculating daily about how to steadily include black folks in that criminal justice vacuum, and we can get ourselves to stop committing black-on-black crime, and we can do that through religious means, education, the economy, the family, reunifying, coming together with a family, and accountability. I mean, there's a lot of things that are at our disposal, but as long as our neighborhoods, we think we live in communities, and we really live in neighborhoods in terms of the community folks. They control their commerce, their cops. They control the legislation and so forth. But in our neighborhoods, we don't control those things. So crime is predictably going to be very high, and it wouldn't matter if it was Polish folks in that same environment. But Polish, Hispanic, Asian, they tend to own their businesses. They tend to have more control in their schools. Mm-hmm. So when you have all these dynamics, black folks have to take note of that, and we have, but now we have to execute it and put it in action by unifying so we can have a base by which we can do repair and restorative resolution within our own areas.
Mm-hmm. Amongst I just want to add one thing. My thing is, see, we're under multiple attacks at the present, because with all the individualism that's being created with the solo headphones, the individual games, the Game Boys and everything, to isolate everybody from one another, isolate the children from one another so they're not growing up like we used to know people, to have friends, to do all the other things. See, that's another attack that nobody's looking at.
And let me just jump in just briefly, if you guys don't mind. And I read a wonderful book by Professor Michelle Alexander called The New Jim Crow, Mass Incarceration in the Age of Colorblindness. And actually, the book really changed my whole perspective on how white supremacy is working today in the new millennium. And I'm going to pose a quick question to the I'm going to call this a panel tonight, because this is actually what this has turned into, a panel. What group of Americans can be legally discriminated against? Legally. What group of Americans can be legally discriminated against?
Black folks.
Legally. Pardon me?
Well, black people, because, I mean,
No. I said legally discriminated, not illegally. It's illegal to discriminate against a black person in this country. It happens,
no.
But it's still illegal.
No, I mean
stop
legally. If you think of the voting rights, we are the only group that legally have to have a visa every 10 years
you
to have to vote.
Carrie, you cannot legally discriminate. You cannot legally deny a black person housing. Not legally, but it happens.
Okay.
I said legally discriminate against. Let me give the answer. Felons. Felons are the group of Americans in this country that can be legally discriminated against. Let me give you some examples. An employer can look at an application, felon, throw it out instantly. Not if you're black, not if you're gay, not if whatever your religion is, can't do it. It's illegal. You can't vote in certain states. You can't serve on a jury in certain states. You can't receive public assistance. You can't get a college loan. Now, I brought that up to say this. This is why it is so imperative about diminishing the black-on-black crime. And I would just say black crime. Because when you get that felony placed upon you, you are, for all intents and purposes, shut out of this society, shut out of this democracy. So this is a very, very timely discussion that we're having. And in many instances, when that criminal is caught, he's labeled a felon. Now look at the black people that are all in the prison industrial complex today. We make up roughly 13% of the nation, but roughly 60 to 65% of those behind bars. This is why it's the racism has become so subtle. We won't call it racism. We'll just criminalize them and put them in jail. And quiet is kept. What amendment was that abolished slavery? Can anybody recall
13th.
The 13th Amendment?
13th Amendment.
If you the 13th, sir?
13th.
If you read the 13th Amendment really closely, it states in that amendment that slavery shall be abolished except for if there's a crime committed, and I'm paraphrasing. So for all intents and purposes, slavery has morphed into the prison industrial complex. I just wanted to share that.
And piggybacking on that, even after June 19th in Texas, when they got the message 2.5 years late, there was a law enacted right after that saying there was no loitering. If you get caught loitering, you could be arrested and go to jail. And they had long prison sentences, so they were put back into slavery. And loitering, how do you live somewhere all your life and know where to go when you leave? There was no place
you're right,
AJ,
and that was called peonage. And that is that was the new Jim Crow, because that happened pretty much within the first few years post-slavery. They instituted peonage, which is just what AJ said. It's basically involuntary servitude. It's slavery, but as they say, it's slavery by a different name. And you're right, the prison industrial complex, I'm speaking from experience. A lot of people don't know that black men, black women, and just minorities in general, the necessitative scheme that they have basically been able to do, or in a sense legalize, is even when you did not, because if you notice, most individuals that they arrest or take into the custody, you will hear very little when it's the average or the poor person. Anything that's dealing with motive, guilt, or innocent. Now, the law says, the federal law says, that you are innocent until proven guilty. But I think most of us know that the presumption is really in the prison industrial complex that if you are black, you're guilty until proven innocent. And that is something that was mentioned earlier about the predisposition of black folks. That is why propaganda, and I agree with that, and those things that are presented, they can even put a face on an individual like me that never committed a crime. But when you're before a jury, they don't see educated black man. They don't see army officer, war veteran. They see black man, criminal.
Mm-hmm. And can the church say amen?
Amen.
Amen.
I agree with all of that. I think somebody posted on Facebook this week that really caught my attention, and it said the difference between a black man killing a black man and a police officer killing an unarmed black man is if a black man that killed a black man is going to be sent away for 30 years, the police officer that killed the unarmed black man is going home for dinner. That's the difference. I mean, that's not exactly how it was, but that was the gist of it. And I have to agree. That's the difference. That's why black on black crime, I'm sorry, it doesn't even pay, first of all. And second of all, or as Vito called it, black crime doesn't pay. And so when you get to, we are 13% of the population and dwindling. And if we don't fix what's going on between stand your ground taking us out, black crime taking us out, or police brutality taking us out, we're going to be even less. And with that said, do you really want to be 3 or 4% of the population beating back the beast? Because if we're having trouble beating back the beast with 13% of the population, imagine if we continue to dwindle, how hard it will be to keep from going back into slavery if we're 4 or 5% of the population. It's just something to think
Carrie,
about.
Carrie, let me say this, Carrie, please. And I'm going to digress on the topic just briefly. Mm-hmm. This is why I am so dismayed with so many quote-unquote black organizations talking about helping illegal immigrants. I know I'm just getting off topic, but I'm just drawing off of what you just stated. How can you help illegal immigrants come in this country and outnumber you, therefore taking your power away? That's why I say when I look at Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson talking about it's the humane thing to do. It's the humane thing to do for who? Why would we want our numbers to dwindle to have that much less power, particularly when it comes to getting legislation passed? How can we possibly dwindle down to 3, 4, 2% of the population and have any clout?
You know, and just to piggyback off that, and then we'll go off it a little bit, but to be honest, if something's going on in the country, a friend of mine worked in a building, a big, huge building. CPS basically handled most of the in that building because, you know, they're so huge. Anyway, the only person that was in maintenance was a Hispanic man who couldn't even speak English. So my question is, how does he come to this country, can't even speak English, and can get a job working at a company or a business or a building that big? Every time I go to the fast food places here, everybody who's working in the fast food place is Hispanic, pretty much. And they're not even young Hispanic people. They're getting older, 30-ish and 40-ish and 50-ish, working at McDonald's. But the problem is when I give them change, if they say my dinner is $6.59, if I give them $7.04, I throw them off. Because they can't, not only are they not speaking the language, but they're not even able to count the change. If you give them anything, and so we are in trouble in this country because they're trying to either get rid of us and replace us. And that's what it seems like, in my opinion. And in my opinion, if that's the case, we are helping them. Black crime is helping them. If we're killing each other, they've already got our replacement there. Okay? So we can look at it however we want to. Black-on-black crime has to be addressed, and it's got to be stopped. And we in the community that are positive brothers and sisters have got to call out the negativity. We got whether that's individually as a group or if you just allow someone or if you just let someone know you are not something that we want around us, because you're bringing us down. You know, you don't see what you're doing, but we see what you're doing in terms of what the effects of what you're doing is having on the community. I think those are the kind of conversations we got to start having individually or as a group with the cancers in our community. I think we got to call them out. That's simple. We got to call them out. Does anybody agree with that, or is it just me?
You know what, Carrie, I agree with you 100%. And not only that, I'm going to give the responsibility to a certain segment of our society. The bulk of crime committed in our community is predominantly done by males.
Mm-hmm.
Not as many females commit crimes as males do. That's statistically across the board. I'm going to ask the sisters out there, stop dealing with criminals.
Yeah.
See, if sister started choosing the educated brother, if the sister started choosing the brother that's a hard worker versus the one that's the criminal, see, we all want to get with a woman. Well, most of us do anyway. This is a whole other paradigm that we're living in. But most men still like women.
Awesome.
And if the women are choosing those that are achieving, perhaps that will help those that are lagging behind get their act in order, so they can find themselves a mate. So I call out the sisters. Stop accepting somebody that is substandard in the community, in your household, let alone in your bed.
You know what? I don't say call out the sisters, but I also say call out the churches, because the Bible says that they ought to be the hedges in the highways. And as they're building these big, you know, humongous churches, they need to be spending more time in the hedges in the highways, going and getting the rest of the sinners, if you will, and bringing them in the fold. Because maybe if we spent more time out there soul witnessing and talking to our brothers and sisters that are not, you know, a part of our group, maybe then we can have, a positive impact on our community for something other than being a beautiful church in the community. I think the church is, I want to say we got to call out the preachers. We got to call out the evangelists. We got to call out all these prophets and tell them to come out of the church and come out to the street and meet these people where they are. I don't know.
And not only that, Carrie, I also feel, since you want to bring up the church, I feel that the church should start becoming just a bit more of a magnet for men. Many men have left the church because, really, what does it have to offer a man? It's become so feminized, since if we want to keep it 100. It's a haven for homosexuals, church choirs, the whole lick. I don't know no real man want to go hang out in the church. That's just me. Listen, if you want to, church, clean yourself up. Get back to the tenets of the book, and perhaps you'll start having more men in the church that can take those tenets from the church, from Scripture, and apply it to their families and apply it to their lives.
But also, you said the church in our community, Carrie, but the church took up building funds in our community for years and moved out.
And never built that extra wing if they stayed.
I was going to say real quick, because it's, I mean, in a sense, in terms of dealing with the black-on-black crime and in terms of what's being said about the church or the religious or spiritual nature, the reason that the church across the board, particularly the black church, was so successful post-slavery right after, and then also during the civil rights movement, is people did support the church. They did support their communities. They gave to the church. They gave to good causes. And I think sometimes in mentioning the church or other partnerships with the church, I've often believed in benevolence. And when I say benevolence, we have to look outside of the box. And I'm trying to toot the horn of the things that are very necessary to continue to have a voice and continue to be able to call things as they are in terms of crime, in terms of the young black men, mostly between the ages of 14 to 15 all the way to 35, that are the highest volume of black men that are in prison. But I said all that to say that I think the days of being a car-carrying DUE member with NAACP and National Action Network, Rainbow Push, Urban League, I'm not saying that people, black folks and all folks, shouldn't participate, but what I am saying is that that's not the only way. And we have to find a way to come to grips with ourselves that we need to take our money, our resources, and when at all possible, give to the organizations that are have been and are trying to be a voice for you. For instance, blog radio, individuals that write on a level where they're trying to be very inclusive and they're trying to get, I think, the real truth out. And I think sometimes you all, I know you, Brother Dino, and you, Carrie, you don't often or rarely ever ask, but my appeal in terms of to keep the dialogue going is to support your radio shows, and because that's a way. I mean, and like I said, I don't give. I try to give where I can, and that's what I'm encouraging other people to do too. As we continue to have the dialogue, we need to support the people who are in the trenches, because you two and other individuals, you're paying a higher price than a lot of people really know. You take time. You're not funded by any big corporations, and we have the luxury of being able to express ourselves. People get to call in, and it's not like regular white mainstream media where they basically ask you questions beforehand and don't really let you get your point across. So, yeah, I'm going to toot you guys' horn because people should consider those things, because it doesn't – everything costs money to run. And I know you don't, but I will, because I have given to your organizations, and I am – encouraging people to give to organizations that you know that are worthy of it, because in terms of beating a drum and fighting a battle, that's part of unity. We have to start thinking differently and don't just think, oh, I got to pay my tithes in the church, when maybe your church has been defunct for the last 20 years taking money and they're not even in the midst of the crime going on in the community, because they're not like the churches of the old of the 50s and the 60s. So I digress, but I say truly consider giving and maybe having fundraisers and doing things, because it's programs like Center Stage and Brother Dino's and We All Be Radio that has significantly kept the drum beating so that people have an open dialogue so that we can continue to maybe come up with solutions and resolutions for the black community.
You know, Dean, you want to say anything on that? Come on, Dean. Okay, y'all, my voice has gone black. I don't know if y'all are even out there. For whatever reason, we're having some technical difficulties, and I expected that. We have technical difficulties all day on Blog Talk Radio as we're trying to post the, or as we were trying to post the event. And now we're having technical difficulties with Block Talk Radio, so I'm not surprised. Computer just went completely blank. And I apologize. Can y'all still hear me out there? Please say something if y'all can. Okay.
Yeah, I can still hear you.
Okay, you can still hear me. For whatever reason,
yeah,
the switch went completely gone black. But no, Christopher Bond, I must say, has donated to Center Stage as well as We All Be Radio. And Dino Dean, if Dino Dean won't say it, I'll say it for him. Yes, you know, we do need you all support. Y'all, as of tonight, at 12 p.m. tonight, I completed my second 3-day fast with just nothing but water. Saying that to say, because you know what? The beast was beating down my door so bad for the last 3.5+ years of just stressing me out because of shows like the shows that I do on police brutality. And today, thank God, Chief Jeff Halstead resigned from law enforcement with the Fort Worth Police Department, but he has been a thorn in my side for the last 3.5 years. So thank God for a milestone. And I just thought it was worth mentioning that it ain't easy doing these shows. And sometimes courage, it takes a lot of courage to do these shows because at the end of the day, we know a lot of times, Dino, myself, Ronald Hurd, where we all be, we know that some of the content that we say is not going to go over well. Dino, can you co-sign that? Okay, I don't know if we lost Dino on the line. AJ, did we lose you? Oh, my goodness. Okay, we can't.
No,
I can't
no, I'm still here. I'm still here.
Okay. I don't know what's going on. Dino, you know, don't you come under flag sometime for your show? Okay, I guess we lost Dino. I don't know. You know, the boards are completely black, so I can't even see who's still on there. I'm not going to even apologize for it because I know what's going on. And like I said, today as I was posting for this show, a lot of times Facebook will flag you for content that they say is racist or has a racial tone to it. Well, the fact that the subject matter is black on black crime is never okay, that clearly says that that does not have a racist tone to it. However, it was completely messed with today. And I'm not sure if it was just, you know, Facebook or, you know, other entities. I don't know. But when I logged on today, the screen completely blacked till well after we went on the air. And so I don't think anybody really understands sometimes the burden it carries, that doing this show carries. But I decided, when I decided to do shows like this, I've had a conversation with Dick Gregory off the air for a minute, and Dick Gregory told me that a soldier can't be scared. And initially, you know, I thought it was all just talk. I thought, okay, Dick, that's easy for you to say. But then I had to realize within my own show that, you know, God gave us all gifts, and we all have an assignment here. And I just didn't want to do a talk show that talks to celebrities and chase down celebrities and what they did this week. And when I decided to attack subjects like tonight's subject and police brutality and some of the other subjects, the tough subjects that we do here on this show, I realized that I wanted to do something to help my community. I wanted to leave, when I leave this earth, something behind that says Carrie did something, then just look out for herself. And so when we do shows like this, it's for that very reason. It's to say that, you know, Center States loves her community. I'm not racist, but I love my community, and I want to see my community do better. I mean, would y'all agree with that? This show is not a racist show. It's not intended to come off with a racist tone. It's intended to say, like the song said at the beginning, wake up. You know, we're under attack. We got to come together. We got to unify. Would y'all agree with that?
You know, I definitely agree with that. I mean, I think a lot of times people are trying to be politically correct, and in some cases they're trying to deny the obvious. And sometimes it's from ignorance. Sometimes they're innocently, they don't understand the fabric of some things or the historical background of certain things. And most people come to the table with what they've heard, not what they've researched, and in a lot of cases not what they have experienced. So I think trying to leave a legacy, but also trying to be of value. There's the old saying in the church world that some people are so heavenly bound that they're no earthly good, as if God only wants you to come to heaven, but he doesn't want you to work and facilitate your purpose and do the best that you can to try and make this a better world. And when people have that in mind, like you do, then it's like, and I'm sure when you're doing Center Stage and when you're doing stories and when you're coming up with and talking and interviewing with people, some things we have, I mean, the military, I enjoy a lot of things, but that's my occupation. But my vocation is to help people. My vocation is to stand up for justice and inequities against all people. So it's a good thing that you have that, and it's very good to hear that, because often talk show hosts, they could be, because they're, like you said, chasing celebrities. But it is good that you have I think, a well-rounded, very informative shows and platforms and panels, and that a lot of times people call who may be racist or have a racist mentality more so, and you still allow them to get their point across. So that has a great admirable benefits, and I do agree with you in terms of leaving a legacy, but trying to do something of a measure to try and make this a better world.
I just think it's crazy. I really do see, you know, that we've got so many things that's taking us out. Ebola, you know, taking out over 7,000 now. You were talking about black people. We're talking about, you know, Stand Your Ground taking out its number, you know, police killings taking out their number. And we are going to be killing each other? Come on, y'all, we got to do better. And that's why I do topics like this. I really wasn't sure if I wanted to touch this because I thought, you know, black people may not be happy with me talking about black-on-black crime. I didn't want to be treated like, you know, some people treated Bill Cosby for saying some of the things that he said about the community. But I thought at the end of the day, I'd rather take some flack about talking about it because it's something that we need to address because people are using it against us. And anytime somebody can take something and use it against you, you need to fix it. And I think we need to fix the cancer in our community one way or another. I mean, the crazy thing is that we've known this has been going on for a while, and we know that critics have been calling us out on it, and it's a wonder why we aren't addressing this more. I mean, the black church should be addressing it. I mean, you know, our politicians should be addressing it. I mean, you name it, individuals should be addressing it. We really should put pressure on the bad apples in our community and say, you know what, we will not allow you any longer to control the blocks, to control the neighborhoods, to control the street. We're not going to do that any longer. Do y'all agree we got to take the streets back? Do y'all agree with that?
Yeah, the streets have to be taken back. I mean, the young men in any given community, specifically speaking to the black community, I agree with Dick Gregory. Those are not Martians. Those are not aliens from another planet. Somebody had that child. And the advent of being afraid of something that two people gave birth to is not the right way. And with fear and God not occupying the same space, there are some definitive things that we can do to unify, to take back our streets. And I think that that is encompassed of both the black man and the black women, but more so the responsibility of the black man. And I think that it's going to require more men, not that there's not any, but more men strategizing, uniting, coming up with solutions to take back our streets. As simple as making sure that you're taking the time out to mentor, tutor some little black boys and adolescents and so forth. And when you see something where it all possible, I mean, I've intervened in things once I knew it was fairly safe. So I think there also has to be some education that's going into how do we take back the streets. And we can probably definitely pull from strategies that organizations and individuals and so forth that have been successful, whether it's through mentoring, whether it's through the de-prison pipeline, men and women that are going to be getting out of prison, making sure that they have stabilization when they get out so they don't recidivate and go back in, and then trying to do and have programs to keep black folks from going to jail. But mainly, like you're saying, taking back the streets, that's a multi-tiered type of process, but it can be done, and we have to sit down and dialogue that and then put it into action and execute it.
You know, this week, I believe, the New Black Panther Party in Dallas, I don't know what you want to call it, they took to the street, and they did just that this week. However, their intention was, on their arms, and they took to the streets of some of the neighborhoods in Dallas, and they said that they were not going to any longer allow police to come into their community and continue to kill innocent, unarmed black men. Do you all agree that that's, you know, an option, or is that an option we should not even have on the table? Did I lose everybody?
What do you mean with the weapons? Well, militias, not just the National Guard as a state militia, but a militia is authorized.
Mm-hmm. A militia is what? Okay. We got completely wiped off the air. Can anyone hear me? Okay. Oh, okay. We're going to try this one more time. We are completely off the air. Okay, y'all, listen, this has been another Friday night's edition of Center Stage. Strange Things Do Happen. It's live radio. If you can still hear me, I apologize for the technical difficulties, but we got 30 minutes left in the show, and we're just going to conclude at the 30-minute mark and say, unfortunately, when you talk about topics like black crime is never okay, I guess you ruffled some feathers. But that is what it is, and we're not concerned tonight because we know ultimately that God is with us and he's in control. That said, we'll see you next week, same time, same channel, right here, Center Stage. Good night.